Dan felt only slightly guilty as he pulled open the bunker's door and stepped into its icily air-conditioned interior. He gave a party at his apartment that weekend after Nobo, Carstairs, and the rest of the Dolphin's crew had shuttled off to Nueva Venezuela. Good cover, he told himself. Throw a party, make everybody think you've got nothing terribly important on your mind. He made certain that his human and robot secretaries invited the Russian ambassador and key members of his staff, and the American ambassador and his flunkies, of course, plus most of the other ambassadors and the cream of Caracas's literary and artistic set, a few carefully selected news reporters and columnists, and top members of the Venezuelan government, naturally, including the Minister of Technology. It would be unthinkable not to invite Señor Hernández and his daughter, too. Dan played the perfect host, affable, friendly to everyone, even the Russians. He flirted with Lissa Andrews and instructed one of the human butlers to make certain that the American ambassador did not drink so much that he made a fool of himself. Videotapes of the newest Hollywood productions were run continuously in the screening room, and Dan had flown the leading ladies of two of the steamier ones in for the weekend. The Russian ambassador, stiff and distrustful at first, melted under the combined influence of vodka and the voluptuous attentions of the more spectacularly endowed of the two actresses. Hernández arrived very late without his daughter. Dan greeted him casually. The Venezuelan replied with cold formality. "Is your daughter well?" Dan asked over the noise of the party. A live jazz band flown in from New Orleans was making the walls vibrate. A robot server, little more than a wheel tray guided by a microprocessor chip and a video eye that allowed it to thread its way through the crowd, stopped at Hernández's side and beeped for attention. The Minister of Technology looked down at the tray of drinks, selected champagne, and then turned his calculating brown eyes back to Dan. The robot, sensing one drink removed from its burden, rolled off into the throng. "I understand there was a tragedy in your family," Dan said. He was practically yelling into Hernández's ear. "My youngest sister died," the Venezuelan said. Dan read it off his lips. The man's voice was lost in the party noise. "My condolences."
"Thank you."
"And your daughter? How is she taking this loss?"
"It was a great shock to her, but she will recover."
"I hope so." Hernández sipped at the champagne, his eyes searching the noisy, frantic room. "How did it happen?" Dan asked.
"I understand they were on Kosmograd."
"Excuse me," replied Hernández. "I must say hello to the Soviet ambassador."
"Of course,"
Dan said graciously, adding silently, "You bastard." The party was still blazing away at full intensity when midnight struck. Dan slipped away unnoticed and rode the elevator up to the top floor. He made his way through the carpeted corridors and empty offices to the communications center where, among other things, there was a desktop computer terminal linked directly to the laser receiver mounted on the building's roof. He looked at his wristwatch. In 30 seconds it would be exactly 12:10. A message was to be beamed by laser from Dolphin 1 to the rooftop in Caracas. No electronic eavesdropper could overhear the message, because it rode on the laser's narrow beam of light. If a snooper could position himself within a city block or so of the roof with the proper equipment, and if he knew exactly when the message would be transmitted, he might be able to intercept it. Even so, he would then have to decode it. Exactly as the digits on Dan's watch flicked to 12:10:00, the computer screen flashed and showed a momentary string of black dots dancing across its phosphorescent face. Before Dan could blink his eyes, the dots were replaced by the decoded message. "All systems go. On schedule." Dan hadn't realized he'd been holding his breath until he let it out with a long, heartfelt sigh. That was the last transmission he would receive from Carstairs, Nobo, and the rest of the crew, unless something went wrong. Everything was on schedule. They would be on their way in 48 hours. He pressed the terminal keys that would erase the message from the computer's memory. Then he made his way back down to the party. The elevator doors slid open, and a solid wall of noise slammed into Dan. He stepped out, took a glass of straight scotch from a passing robot server, and noticed Zach Freiberg staring at him from across the crowded room with questioning eyes. "Our security leak?" Dan wondered. Freiberg would not be a conscious informer, he knew, but the scientist was not the tightest man with information. Dan nodded to him and raised his glass slightly. Freiberg broke into a big, boyish grin. If anybody's looking for a clue, Dan told himself, there it is. Dawn was well advanced before the last of his guests straggled to the elevator and left. The Soviet ambassador was among the finalists, propped on either side by hefty, unsmiling men who were utterly sober. A delightful party, he told Dan blurrily. Leave it to the capitalists to throw a wonderful, decadent party. I must get the name of that actress. His two bodyguards dragged him into the elevator. The last Dan saw of the ambassador, the old man was giggling and waving to him with both hands as the guards held him up between them. You must sober me up quickly, he mumbled to the guards in Russian. Comrade Malik is arriving today. The doors slid shut. Malik, coming back here. Dan stood for a long, silent moment, staring at the closed elevator doors. Why, he asked himself. What's he up to? How much does he know? Making a mental note to have his intelligence people tweak their sources inside the Soviet embassy, Dan made his way through the litter and stale smoke of the dead party toward his bedroom, wondering what he could do to improve the security of the asteroid mission. Malik, here in Caracas, less than 48 hours before the spacecraft's departure. That's not good. Double damn it to hell, that's not good at all. He found both actresses in his bed, wrapped in each other's slithering arms and long, smooth legs, oblivious to him and everything else except each other. There's nothing I can do about Malik right now, Dan told himself. With a shake of his head, he decided that there would be time enough later on to comb out the bugs that the Russians had undoubtedly strewn around his apartment. They probably stuck a few thimble-sized video cameras here and there, too. If they want to see capitalist decadence, this ought to make their eyes pop. He quickly stripped and joined the two sweaty, drug-dazed women on the big, delicious waterbed. Chapter 18. Hernandez had arrived home from Dan Randolph's party early, shortly after midnight. But then he went out again and did not return until nearly dawn. Lucita, sleeping fitfully in her room on the third floor of the rambling old house, heard his comings and goings, and knew that he had been to see one of his women. He keeps a harem, she said to herself as she combed her hair that morning, sitting at her dresser. The good Lord alone knows how many women think that he loves them. When he dies, half the women in Caracas will wear black. She put the brush down and stared at herself in the dresser mirror. There was no makeup on her face. She had just showered. Her eyes were not puffy, but dark rings of sleeplessness marred them. It had been a long time since she had laughed, or even smiled. Not since she had last seen Dan Randolph, and even then... She shook her head, dismissing such thoughts from her mind, or trying to. Getting up from the dresser, she crossed the broad, sunny bedroom and went to her clothes closet. Opening one of its triple doors, she saw her full-length reflection in its long mirror. Lucita slipped off her robe and let it drop to the floor. Naked, she examined her image closely. A little bird, she thought. A plucked chicken. Scrawny, almost. Your legs are too thin, your hips too narrow. Your breasts are small. But she turned sideways, profiling herself. Not that small, I suppose. At least they don't sag. And your backside isn't as big as most of the girls. Some of them look like they're carrying watermelons around with them. Still, she ached for the tall, long-legged, exotic good looks of the mestizo girls she saw in the city. Smooth skin, the color of old ivory, high cheekbones, and almond eyes. They somehow got the best of their mixed Indian, Spanish, and black blood. I'm just a short, pale, plucked chicken, Lucita thought. Carefully, she selected a pair of jeans and a sleeveless, light pink blouse, then tugged on the most elevating pair of rope sandals in the closet. She was putting on a touch of lipstick back at the dresser when her maid tapped timidly at the door. Enter, Lucita called out. Your father wants to speak with you, the maid said. She was an older woman, in her 30s, plump enough to show that she did not work terribly hard. He's awake? The maid smirked. I think he has a hangover. The cook said...